Imagine picking up your life, your work and career, your partner and your kids, your stuff, at least the stuff you don't sell or get rid of, and moving it all to the desert, and starting life there from scratch. No electricity, no plumbing, no wireless internet. Could you do it? And why would you? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we check back in with Kansas City musician and producer Miles Bonney. He and his wife Jessie left a year ago with big plans for an off-the-grid existence. We'll hear how it's going and what the implications are for others of us who might be considering a simpler, more sustainable lifestyle. What could you live without, and what wouldn't you miss? Frankly, how does it work? We'll talk to the experts and hear from you. It's ahead on Central Standard, after the news. This morning, my electronic alarm clock went off. I picked up my smartphone to check my email, I flipped on a light switch, I ran water to brush my teeth, I flushed a toilet, I got on my wireless internet and got to work. Basically everything I did depended on the network of wires, pipes, airwaves, and, I don't know, internet tubes that connects us all to each other. Now imagine giving it all up. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about going off the grid, but first we're actually going to go down to City Hall, where this morning there was a bomb threat called in that has caused an evacuation of the building. Joining us to give us the latest information is City Spokesman Chris Hernandez of Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, thanks for taking a few minutes on a busy day to talk with us.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Are you still standing outside City Hall?
I am. I am across the street from City Hall in the city parking garage, and we are waiting while police sweep the building. They are doing a pretty good job. Just to bring you up to date, what happened is that a bomb threat was called into police this morning. Now, that threat indicated that a bomb had been placed in the building yesterday afternoon, and so as a precaution, our security staff decided to evacuate the building. The good news is that City Hall had held a fire drill just a month ago on October 11th, so the city staff knew what to do, and the evacuation proceeded pretty easily and calmly, and so now we're just waiting for police to do their job in terms of checking over the building, and we have also canceled all public meetings through noon today, and we're hoping to get back into the building around that time.
How does evacuation of a building like that work? It's 24 stories, maybe, something like that? How orderly was the...
29 stories.
29 stories.
29 floors, and people have designated safe areas in the blocks around City Hall, whether it's across the street or down a block. And there was an announcement made over the loudspeaker that went on every floor, and people just grabbed their coats and proceeded down the stairs or the elevators to get out of the building.
So would you say the mood is one of genuine concern, or are folks more just annoyed at the inconvenience of having to leave their workstations?
Well, I'm not sure if you're speaking of the staff or the police. Those might be different opinions. The police are doing a very good job. In fact, we've just seen one of the tools they often use in situations like this, the robotic machine, is now checking some of the grounds, and we know that the police have brought in dogs, bomb-sniffing dogs, in order to help search the building more quickly. And they have cordoned off an area for about a half a block to a block around City Hall just to keep any pedestrian or vehicular traffic away while they do their job.
We heard in some of the earlier reports, Chris, that traffic was being kept away from that whole area. Do you know how large an area around City Hall is blocked off right now?
About a block in each direction. There still is access to the Jackson County Courthouse from the south, but not from the north. They are neighbors to the south. So certainly there might be some inconvenience if you're trying to get directly to City Hall, but there are plenty of ways to get around in the downtown area.
Last question, Chris. You mentioned that public meetings have been canceled through noon today. Is there anything else that happens next? Do you know what will happen in terms of making up meetings that were canceled this morning, or any further examination or investigation that has to happen?
Well, I can tell you we were in the middle of a public hearing on the 26th floor in the council chambers, listening to the public give comments on their thoughts about the airport and the debate over whether to change the configuration of the terminals there. That was interrupted. We certainly will find a way to reschedule that so that people can continue to give that public input that we were looking for. And, you know, we'll just get back to work, and certainly any meetings that need to be made up will be made up.
That's Chris Hernandez. He's Deputy Communications Director of Kansas City, Missouri, city spokesperson. Chris, on a busy morning, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to be with us.
You're quite welcome.
This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Going off the grid is a fantasy some people indulge in their imaginations with some regularity, but few do it for real. Our guests today are some who have. Miles and Jesse Bonney left Kansas City about a year ago. Miles is a successful musician and producer. He's the composer of the theme music you hear on this program, in fact. With his partner Jesse, they left to live a very different life in the high desert of New Mexico. Here to talk about it with us today, Jesse and Miles Bonney. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So welcome back to you, Miles. You're a regular on this program before you left for New Mexico.
Yeah, not only did I leave the different infrastructures, I guess, I left behind, unfortunately, but I do miss it. I love the show.
Well, we appreciate having you back. So let's start with this question. What in the world were you thinking? Why on earth would you leave the beautiful place that is Kansas City, the relatively comfortable life that people have here, and go live in the desert? What were you thinking, Jesse?
Maybe it was a little too comfortable here.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, you grew up in Liberty, so you spent a lot of time here, a lot more than I have.
Yeah. Is that what motivated you? Did you have a sense there was something wrong or something missing because life was comfortable?
I think so. And I think maybe we needed a little more adventure. I don't know, myself, I was motivated to, I like to experiment, try new things, so this is a big experiment.
All right, well, let's think of what some of the reasons were not to do this. I mean, Miles, you had a successful, you still have a successful career as a musician, a producer here in town. I assume both of you, your whole network of friends and family is here, and two daughters as well, right? How old are your daughters?
2 and 6.
Okay.
And so timing-wise, I'd had many different wonderful day jobs working for different, you know, nonprofits in the area, and music career is going well here, and I do have a lot of connections. And I have no connections down there in the Southwest, so I definitely wasn't sure how I was going to earn money after we moved. So I did spend some time earlier this year in Kansas City alone while my family left before me, because Jesse was kind of anxious to head out on the journey. And I just saved money with the idea of, hey, you know, I'm not sure how this is going to go, but we're going to dedicate as much time as necessary, and I'll figure out, you know, what the new life will look like afterward.
When did you first begin to formulate this idea? I mean, did you just wake up one morning and said, I think we should move out to where we're totally off the grid?
I think it was a couple years ago. It took a while to formulate. I think it started with an idea of, like, how can we not pay bills?
So there are a strong financial reason.
Yeah, I think that was one of the motivating factors at first. And I think one of my first thoughts was a yurt.
A yurt, which I've read about yurts. Yurts are sort of, they look, I guess you'd call them sort of temporary, like, houses, right?
Sure. Like, I think...
They're normally circles.
Sort of like a
large
tent.
Structured
tent.
Tents.
Yeah.
Were you reluctant to leave, given, as we said, sort of the comfort, the established life you had here?
Not me.
Yeah, Jesse's
not Jesse. Miles?
Yeah, I was a lot more out in the community, I guess you could say. She was, when we first met in Lawrence, Kansas, in the area, we soon started a family. And upon having children, we started paying more attention to the food that we were growing the children with. And then one thing kind of turned to another, and we started just reexamining life. Part of the reason I did spend 3 months alone here earlier this year was so that I could try to do as many things possible in Kansas City without regret before I left. But it's always great to be back, and I still love cities, so it's wonderful to visit as well.
Okay, so last time I checked, there actually was a fair amount of open space in Kansas and Missouri, but you went all the way to New Mexico. Why is that?
This is a hard question for me to answer. This is one I get a lot. There's something intriguing to me about the Southwest that I wanted to be there.
Also, again, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that I think Jesse grew up in the area, up in Liberty, may have made her ready to move, whereas I grew up in the East Coast, and so coming to the Midwest was kind of like a second home already, and it was just maybe also another opportunity to get to know another area of the country.
So there is an element, and you used the word adventure a minute ago. Did this feel like an adventure for the two of you?
Yes, for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was an adventure we had to succeed at.
Yeah. Right, an adventure, but your life was on the line. So how did you then make the move? And I want to – we'll get to what happened once you got there in the first – you know, in a moment. But I mean, you had to make several important life decisions in order to get off the grid, to get out of town. What were some of the, you had to sell a house or get out of a lease or something?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were living Paseo and 78th Street, roughly, in a house that I was very proud of to be a young father owning. It was quite an accomplishment in my mind. I guess as Jesse was raising kids there, we had to figure out, you know, what is it that we do and don't like about the situation. There was some violence that I was definitely adverse to in the area that I wasn't used to. But the house was great. We had to eventually get out of the house, which was its own process, of course, especially when the housing market was still pretty rough. And then we realized we didn't want to pay rent once we moved. So we ended up converting a trailer that we lived in, about a 16-foot enclosed trailer. And that was really the first step.
And so you lived out of a trailer in the beginning. That feels like a camping trip, right? I mean, did it have that feel about it? Was it just did it feel like a temporary sort of vacation?
Like if you're on vacation for a year, I guess.
With kids, and yeah. Nowhere else to go.
But it was great to have the trailer. We ended up taking it down to Tucson last winter, which was great opportunity. It's just to have a mobile home that could be taken around was really, I think, helpful to our situation.
And that was your only home during that time.
Right.
I mean, you didn't have a safety net, right? Other than maybe your family. But you didn't have anywhere to go back to.
Right.
I want to actually bring into the conversation Chris DeVolder. He is an architect with 360 Architecture here in Kansas City. Welcome to you, Chris.
Thanks, Brian.
Chris is something of an expert on sustainability and has dealt with others who want to live a little more sustainably, a little more off the grid, if not completely so. How typical is the experience in your experience that Miles and Jesse have had?
That's a great question. Miles and Jesse are probably the second couple that I've met in my 20-year career that have actually done something like this. So it's very rare.
People talk about it, but then actually did it.
Sure. Yeah. People, as you mentioned at the beginning, I think it's a dream. It's part of the bucket list of what people really want to do, but these guys are actually doing it.
Are there people doing it here in the Kansas City area, to your knowledge?
There are a few. When we talk about being off the grid, there's a lot of different definitions of what that could be. And in my mind, and we talked about this a little bit before the show got started, I think most people think living off the grid, quote unquote, is I'm not going to have any energy or water bills. I think you see a lot of folks that are trying to do that, and it's really a step at a time. It's not like, okay, I'm going to do this by Friday.
Yeah, that's Chris DeVolder. He's an architect with 360 Architecture. We're also talking with Jesse and Miles Bonney today on Central Standard here on KCUR-FM. We stream live at kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We are talking about what it's like to live off the grid, and so I want to jump back to Miles and Jesse and their story. So you get out of town. You go to a place in New Mexico. Where in New Mexico did you go?
We're in a town called Tres Piedras. It's about 30 minutes northwest of Taos, mm-hmm. or about 30 minutes south of the Colorado border.
So high desert, mountainous area?
Mountainous, yes.
And what's the climate in Tres Piedras?
It's very nice in the summer. It doesn't get – it gets kind of hot, but not really, really hot.
How's the winter?
The winter last – I was there for last December – pretty cold, very okay. snowy.
Negative 14.
Oh, so that's about when you arrived, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you do when you get there with your trailer and your land, but nothing on it?
Well, last winter I was staying at our neighbor's house.
Okay. And they're also living off the grid.
Right.
And it was definitely not sealed well.
Yeah. So describe it for when you walk up, what would we see in this this so-called house?
Well, their house, they're an interesting couple. Hello to Sam and Alice. They have a combination of no building skills and an architecture degree. But it's largely adobe. It's almost like an octagon, actually, which makes it more hard to build. With the second story, Jesse and the kids were staying on the base layer. There is a large wood stove there. But they were still completing the house themselves, and they were leaving town for the winter to a warmer climate while Jesse kind of dove into the process with the kids. And it wasn't easy for her, which is why she went down to Arizona as a result last winter.
Okay, so what were the big problems that you initially faced when you got there? What comes to mind for me is no heating, no plumbing, at least on your land, right?
Right. In the winter, you kind of had to keep a fire going a lot of the time. That's work.
How much work is it? I mean, just adding wood to a fire? Why do you laugh, Miles?
Well, because I went down there with them initially to kind of get settled, and then I left. Left them fending for themselves, but it was her choice. But, you know, it was so cold, and the stove is, I don't know if it's most efficient, so you'd have to almost create three large fires per night to maintain heat at that point. And at that same time, she was breastfeeding our youngest child and sleeping, taking care of both of them. So you don't really ever want to get up in the middle of the night if you can help it by waking them up. And so there's definitely some sacrifices regarding just expecting to be cold.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't realize you were nursing at that time. That means that you had to be in pretty good health yourself and eating well and taking care of yourself.
Sure. It was a lot of work doing that. That's why we decided to go down to Tucson.
Yeah. What were your finances like, if I can ask personal question at this period?
Definitely, it's definitely part of the whole consideration, and the more we talk to people about this, the more we realize what barriers can exist. We basically had just a few thousand available to us that was our savings, and we decided to just kind of take it all and throw it into the cost of the land, which wasn't that expensive. And then not have savings. Beyond that, I would just try to save money for my music and other jobs and kind of piece together that for the building costs, which were minimal, but also based upon what decisions we made in the process, because there's lots of different ways to build natural homes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask about that. I mean, one of the reasons you said initially you wanted to do this is to save money. Mm. Chris DeVolder, do people who get into this world wanting to live more sustainably, are they doing it for the money? And is that a good decision? Does it actually cost that much less?
You know, I think most people are doing it not necessarily for the money. That's certainly a consideration. I think it comes back to what their core values are, that they're really trying to follow those. And, you know, once you've done this, if you've done it right, you know, Miles mentioned the house they stayed in last winter was very drafty. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to do it right, then I think it's going to cost more because, as Jesse mentioned, you got to keep making the fire and you spend more energy doing that. But if you do it right, if you take the time and if you're intentional about what you're doing, you can create a home that's you know, very comfortable, sealed, and maybe you only have to do one fire a night.
So I'll ask the Bonnies about their home in a moment, but typically, if someone wants to build their own home as simply as possible, how much money are we talking about?
How big do you want it to be?
Big enough for a family with two children.
Yeah, I sort of kid about the answer, but it's a question that's hard to answer. It depends on what each family wants. You know, you may have a family with two kids, and you want bedroom for everybody and playrooms and that sort of thing. That's going to cost a certain amount of money. Or it could be where you're going to live a little more simpler, a little smaller. It's obviously going to cost less. And you got to look at both how much it's going to cost to build it, but also how much is it going to cost to operate it. Too often we just look at that first cost and don't realize, oh, I've got this 4,000-square-foot home. Now I have to pay the bills to keep it going.
So did Miles and Jesse, did you leave with a plan in mind? Did you have a floor plan for a house you were going to build?
Yes.
And Jesse, I understand you did most of the research to sort of get that in place.
Yes. I went through a lot of sketching. I eventually got Google SketchUp and kind of started making 3D plans for the house. We were looking at it the other day, and it does my last plan looks almost exactly like the house. So.
And so you have now built the house?
Yes.
Are you done?
Not totally done. It just needs some finishing. Like, we need to plaster the walls. We still need to put the floor down. We're just walking around on rocks and a rug.
Okay.
Right now.
So describe the house for us.
Sure. And you can correct me if I'm saying this incorrectly, Jesse. I'd say it's south facing. You know, obviously this has a relationship to weather and ways to, you know, keep mass in the house. A wide variety of materials, everything from adobe cob, which is making adobe, but instead of turning them into bricks and drying them, you just kind of put the wet adobe and stack it up as you go. It's kind of a hands-on process. We also used earth bags, and we used some wood, and we also used some straw bales.
Mm-hmm. And how about plumbing, water? What do you do about water?
We collect rainwater from our roof, and we have a 1,050-gallon water tank on the back of our house. And we have a pipe that comes from the water tank into the house, and then we filter that water. So that's where we get our water. And as far as the bathroom, we have a composting toilet, and we'll eventually next year probably build a bathhouse.
And is that enough water that you collect that way for all your living, all your water needs?
Yeah, we don't have too many water needs.
Yeah.
Drinking and like sponge baths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, when you're not flushing toilets or like making big baths of water, you know, you end up not needing that much.
We do laundry in town, the laundromat.
Eventually, I want to do my own laundry though.
Yeah. So there are some ways that you're accommodating. You're not totally off the grid yet.
No.
Is that a goal?
No.
We're not completely self-sustaining, and I don't know that I'd ever want to be. I think that seems like a ton of work. But
I think we're less, I mean, I'm less interested in being quote-unquote off the grid than I am with being as self-sufficient as possible, and not having bills arrive every month that I have to pay.
So let me ask this of Krista Volder. You don't have to go off the grid to be more self-sustaining. What are some ways that people try to live more sustainably, even in an urban environment?
Yeah, great question. You know, we talked a little bit about making sure you have the right windows, insulation, using the sun when you need it. But really, to be more self-sustaining, I think it starts with food. You know, food is the key to sustainability, I think. When you think about food, you can talk about energy, you can talk about water, you can talk about nutrition. You could build the best house in the world, but if you're not feeding the folks inside it and paying attention to what's inside the house, then what's the point?
So when you talk about sustainable food, you mean locally sourced food? What do you mean?
It's a whole combination, yeah. Locally sourced food. Again, back to the reference of I could have the best house, but if I'm buying my food that's made in Chile, for example, there's a lot of a lot of impact to energy that I have to pay attention to. Local food, doing your own garden, it's easy to do herbs and simple vegetables and fruit. And there's a lot of great organizations here in Kansas City, Cultivate KC, Growing Grove, that can help people figure that out on the food side. Composting, thinking about waste.
Yeah. Let me ask Jesse and Miles, what do you do for food? It's not as though you're out there killing it and eating it all from right off the land, right?
Well, we have been. I will learn how to bow hunt for my neighbor.
And really?
Yeah, he killed an elk this year, and there's a lot of elk hunting, and so we've been eating a lot of elk, and it's actually Jesse's new favorite meat. But you can speak better to the gardening than I can, Jesse.
Yeah. excuse me. Food is probably what I'm most excited about getting into, like, maybe that's one of the reasons why I built the house, is so we could have our own area for our own food. Permaculture is something I'm really excited about, like having food forests and perennial vegetables and just exploring all the ways we can get food into our environment.
And from our environment, you know, whatever's naturally there from gathering.
Yeah, so... And so it's not all your garden. You're actually...
In the meantime, yeah, I mean...
In the meantime, we're going to the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean, we basically started building the house in March of this year. So we spent most of our year just doing that and figuring out those processes. And the next step in this coming year is finishing the house and solidifying a food situation.
Great. Is it good land for growing food?
You definitely have to amend the soil It's very rocky and a lot of clay, but I'm happy to have been the soil.
Very good. Well, let's invite our listeners to join the conversation. Have you ever thought about going off the grid? What's keeping you from doing it? Or if you have actually done it, give us a call and tell us what it was like to live a little bit more independently or sustainably or naturally. You can call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. We'll also check email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We actually already have a call from Dawn in Overland Park. Dawn, good morning.
Good morning.
So I understand you've lived off the grid.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My ex-wife decided to do somewhat the same thing back in 1980. In January of 1980, we left Kansas City and went, we went to a commune down in South Missouri called Eastwind, which we had decided not to do it just her and me so much, but you know, to try to get involved with other people to try to build something a little bit bigger, more complex, and maybe more satisfying. So we tried Eastwind. We went on going to more than one place to make a choice. You know, so that didn't seem necessarily quite right. And then we went off to Arizona to try to meet some people that didn't show up. And then we went to a place called Arcosati out there north of Arizona, or north of Phoenix, which is in the high desert out there, and we were pretty impressed because they had some pretty big and pretty elaborate buildings. It was founded by an architect also, you know, Apollo Solari, who died last year.
So, Don, you came back from this experience? You live back in the city now?
I still would go for something like that if I could find, you know, the right people in the right situation. And it's, you know, it's just such a difficult problem to do that. I don't feel, well, I'm much older now, so it'd be a tremendous strain to try to do something like that.
Do you regret it, or are you glad you gave it a shot?
Well, the experience was wonderful, and it taught me a lot, and it was good for me that way. I mean, otherwise, those years that I took off, I could have used towards retirement. I might be able to be retired by now if I hadn't done that.
So there, for you, it was a financially costly decision.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, but yeah. And it was rewarding in another way. So you know, it's kind of a balance. It's a real difficult decision to do something like that, and you're terribly lucky or very ingenious if you can figure out how to make it work. And I wish them all the luck.
Don, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
Okay. And thank you.
Don called us at 816-235-2888. What are the costs associated with this? Besides the cost of building the house, once you're there, I assume you obviously have a lower property tax rate, but are there other benefits or costs that people don't think of, Chris?
Yeah, certainly. I think when you're looking at doing it, even if you have an existing house that you want to make more efficient, let's say, a lot of people can find an energy auditor, and that's really the first step. Have someone come in and give you advice on what it is you need to do. That's the easy part. But then I think people always struggle with, okay, how do I pay for this? If you don't have a lot of money in savings, where am I going to go? And there's now programs. Metropolitan Energy Center here in Kansas City has a program called HEAL, where they actually can bring financing to you, and you know, the savings from the adjustments that you make are what pay off the loan.
Yeah.
So it's a self-sustaining approach to that.
And Jesse and Miles, as you've planned your future, are you seeing a more financially sustainable model going forward?
Yeah. I mean, part of what makes this possible for me, I think, was that in our relationship, I've always been the person that was making money for us. And my interest in just creative endeavors and past experiences giving me some confidence to try things, no matter where I am, definitely allowed me to be less fearful. And I do look forward to pursuing more of my passions and finding a way to help it, help us as well in the process. So it's still something I'm figuring out.
Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Miles and Jesse Bonney about their experience living sustainably in the high desert of New Mexico. We'll also discuss the future. How long can this go on? We'll also talk about the impact on life and career and music and the work that Miles and Jesse do. We'll take a listen to some music that has been composed by solar power out in the high desert of New Mexico. And we'll take your calls, too, at 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and that was Miles Bonney with, I think, the demo, actually, the original version one of the theme music for Central Standard. Wait, go ahead.
We worked on a couple of versions when the show was being created, and that was one of them.
So that one actually plays once in a while around here still. It was the original theme music. We have another version, but Miles wrote that too, as well as I think the bumper music
we
played between stories. So he is the musician behind Central Standard. We're talking today about living off the grid, which Miles and Jesse Bonney are trying to do in the high desert of New Mexico. We're also joined by Chris DeVolder, who's an architect here in town and an expert on sustainability. Chris, you know, when folks walk away from their existing sort of urban life and try to do this, they still have some expenses to take on once they get to their new place, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you've got to pay to build whatever it is you're going to build. And I think we've already heard from Miles and Jesse about some of the things they have to do now, at least temporarily. They have to go into town to do their laundry. It's not like you just walk down the hall and throw your whites in the washer. And I'd be real interested to hear from these guys what the biggest surprise was doing this that you're now having to deal with day to day. Because I think that's what people don't realize is there's going to be challenges, and it's how do you deal with the challenge when it comes to you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I want to ask you, I mean, among the challenges are sort of the impact that you have. One of the reasons to move in the first place is to have less impact on the environment. But of course, you're having a different kind of impact when you're out there trying to build from scratch in a off the grid environment.
That's right. And they're using building methods that are not new, but we've kind of forgotten them, I think, in our culture. So you're having to learn how to do that. And if you don't have experience, then I think these guys would say every single day was a learning experience.
Yes.
And you are having an impact. You know, you're going out to land out in the middle of nowhere, and you're creating something out there, and you have to be cognizant of what that impact is compared to maybe what you could do at your existing house.
How much energy can you create? Enough for your own family, more than enough for your own family with just the basic solar power that you might experience by putting a panel on top of your house?
Yeah, sure. You want to be able to make sure your house is insulated, make sure it's sealed, make sure you're using the sun the best you can. And then I always tell people, you know, at that point, then let's look at renewable energy. Put mm-hmm. some solar panels up there, and hopefully you're going to generate more than you need. And now all of a sudden you've become an asset to your community, and you're putting energy back in the grid.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, that's assuming that you're not actually off the grid, but actually
Correct.
You're participating in the broader grid.
That's right. And I'd encourage people to, if you can, to do that. Because like you said, Ryan, you're participating, you're giving back to the community.
Yeah. Well, let's talk to a couple of callers who have questions. Mark is in Kansas City, Missouri. Mark, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My comment is just kind of unique. I have a brother that lives on a sailboat, and so he is completely off the grid. The only thing that he needs is a power connection sometimes to the dock that he has or he, you know, he borrows from a friend. So there's a lot of tax implications.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a different lifestyle than building your house from scratch, living on a sailboat, I suppose.
Completely. Then I have another friend, I would say, that moves from place to place. He house sits, and he plants organic gardens. So he has a very low impact, and what he tries to do when he goes is to try to teach other people how to have a very low impact on urban life. So those are my comments, and I'll let you kick it around. I'll take it off the air.
Hey, Mark, thanks for calling. Miles Bonney.
Yeah, I guess I just want to mention that in sharing our story around town and with others, I know my goal is just to provide any information that might help someone else in any way. Our interest is definitely not in saying that this is the right way to go about it for everybody or that it's better than or worse than anything else. I just know that in my own experience, it was something that we had to learn as we went. And so I just want to kind of contribute to the discussion in case other, anybody else can benefit in any way.
And Jesse Bonney, you did a lot of the research beforehand. Where do you go for information on how to do this?
I read a lot of books. I pretty much read every book in the Kansas City library system about building houses. Some online stuff. I feel like it's harder to find stuff online that's really good, solid information.
But is there a particular website that you found especially helpful or a particular book?
There's some really good books I referred to a lot even while we were building.
We did put together a list because we recently had a discussion at Prosperos, and if it'd be helpful at all and allow it for us, we can maybe provide that on the website later at kcur.org.
Well, thank you. Yes, that is the website, kcur.org, and by all means, we will provide a link. So if we can get that from you later, that'll be great. Let's talk to June in Midtown. June, welcome to Central Standard. She called us at 816-235-2888. June, good morning.
Morning. I just wanted to mention a resource for listeners and potentially even for your guests that comes right out of Topeka. It's Mother Earth News. It's one of the most successful, oldest magazines in the country. I think it's been around for 42 years. And they have, actually, you can buy a DVD of all their past issues. And it's all about how to live off the land. And it's all kinds of information and articles and resources. And one resource they have that I could point to based on what you just said is their, they have a bookstore of the best books that are about living off the land.
Okay. Well, thanks for that that tip, June. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
And I saw all of our guests nod their heads when June said it. Jesse?
Good magazine.
Mother Earth News.
Good tip.
Very good. You know, I want to ask you about something else. So we've been talking a lot about sort of the technical parts and the building of the house and the experience of being out, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. But your life has gone on. You've had to continue, in your case, Miles, as an artist and musician. How has being in the desert, living in this very different way, changed your work, changed your perspective on what you do?
I think I'm thinking more and more about the fact that we do have one solar panel, and recording with that solar panel spiritually, I'm hoping will increasingly become a different process for me, that I can just be a part of that energy. But also, we're at 8,000 feet, which is pretty high up. I appreciate that the weather goes from cold to warm every day. I love the views. Apparently we're in big sky country, or however they say it. So the sky just looks insane sometimes. I can actually see the stars. I never really knew it was to see all the stars. And I love the terrain up there. I love the mix of high desert and forest. So I'm continuing to soak that in and look forward to doing more of that now that I don't have to focus on just the building tasks as often.
You've been working on new music. In fact, I think this might be your most recent piece, a piece called Water Rights, that you recorded actually by solar power, right?
Yeah. In building the home, we were still staying in the trailer, and I needed – we can always use more space to branch out, and so I built a little daddy shack, as we call it, out of wood, and I finally tried to test the panel and hook up my equipment, and it worked for enough time to do this.
Well, let's take actually a little listen to Water Rights. This is Miles Bonney. Halfway through the song, we're jumping into it.
Might look the same, but every day it's closer. Doesn't have a name. Until now, things have been so wrong. Water rights. Just you wait, it won't be long. The dust is here, as seconds tick on by.
jugs are near. Fill them up after a 2-hour drive. I might be the only one mixing concrete with my filtered water. Maybe the future's begun, and I'm realizing it's time to realize I'm a father. Take steps, take steps, take steps, take steps now.
That's Miles Bonney performing his song Water Rights, inspired and actually recorded and mixed by solar power in the desert. Miles?
Yeah, I don't mean for it to be cryptic sounding, but it was just kind of the atmosphere of the beat. But yeah, it was cool. I mean, I did mix concrete with filtered water, and I thought that was kind of weird at the time. And I do use 5-gallon jugs, you know, in addition to rainwater now.
Do you have to walk? Do you have a two hours to fill them out?
Half hour.
your partner's over here saying he's exaggerating. It's not really that bad.
I don't know why I said that.
No, I mean, it, obviously, some of the detailed content of the lyrics are inspired by your experience, but also the sound. I mean, does that capture the mood of being out there?
I mean, it's kind of an ethereal atmosphere. You know, there's not a whole lot of... I started reading books on magnetism and electromagnetism, or just the effect of being around a lot of electronics and just and radio waves and just things that we have little knowledge of at this point. And so I definitely feel a different energy out there in a lot of ways.
Do you feel like this is having a positive impact on your creative career?
Absolutely. I think that when I was living in Kansas City, I was able to create a lot of material, and even since I've been back just this week, I've recorded 4 songs that I love a lot. But I think, like, I've just being a part of a city, I'm contributing to a culture, and I'm creating things like what I've already enjoyed. Whereas out there, I feel like this process of getting to build myself up and our family's lives from the ground up makes me question and be more comfortable with starting from scratch and saying, all right, who am I as a person? So less than trying to sound like this artist or that genre, what is it I can do with my body? You know, it's much more just from the grassroots up again.
816-235-2888 is the number to call to be part of the conversation. 235-2888. Let's talk to Ernest in Midtown. Ernest, good morning.
Hey, I'm calling because I've got a lot of parallels with these two. I'm a band leader, musician. My wife is part of the sustainable farming scene. We moved to Kansas City in 2004 from Taos, New Mexico. We used to live at an off-the-grid in an earthship out there by the...
What, Ernest? What is that?
an earthship, which is just a type of off-the-grid house out near where it sounds like they're living.
Yeah.
And my band out there recorded an album in an earthship off of solar power. And, you know, it's just... I'd love to hear their take on life and what they're finding out there. It's fascinating stuff. Likewise, I was really inspired to be so closely tied to nature and the seasons, and also the amount of rain that falls. You know, I felt like I was deeply tied to how much water we had and what the weather was like. And choosing to move to Kansas City, we tried to do that here, my wife and I, by retrofitting one of these older Midtown houses and still trying to stay tied. It's harder in Kansas City than it is in Taos because it's so raw and exposed out there.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your experience, Ernest. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Chris DeVolder, what is he saying? What kind of house did he live in?
Earthship.
What is an earthship?
So, you know, we've talked about yurts and adobe, and there's a lot of different types of maybe you might call it native construction. So it's another type of building technology, building approach, where a lot of earth contact maybe is another way to talk
like
about
that. Like you're
digging
into the earth almost?
Right. Okay. Like a hobbit house as an example. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little less native though, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's created by, I forgot the guy's name.
Reynolds.
Yeah, Mike Reynolds in like the 70s or 80s basically is a concept with a lot of bottles, cans, tires, and concrete.
Jesse, why did you decide on the particular design you did for your house?
I went through a lot of designs. I think I finally came up with something that was the smallest that I could feel comfortable living in, because I knew we had to get it done in one season mm-hmm. before it got cold again. And I didn't want to be stuck in the cold, basically. So yeah. we went as small as we could.
Which raises for me the question of having a family. You've got, as you said, a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. Yes. How has this experience been for them?
I think it's been really good for them. There's a lot of kids in the neighborhood their age. I think it's awesome. My 6-year-old can walk over to her friend's house by herself whenever she wants. And it's a good freedom. It's a good, as the caller was just saying, being very close to nature. That's something I really appreciate about living there, is how tied we are to the weather and the moon. And we live right next to a national forest that I can just walk in and wander wherever I want to around there. There's so much to explore, and it's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, you all have a Flickr account, and I saw some of the pictures online. I saw that there's a lot of other children in these pictures.
Yes,
so
yes.
So I think we may have an image in our mind of you being out isolated without community, but you call it a neighborhood.
Yes, we live in a neighborhood. We have people within walking distance. And it's really nice to just feel like you can just walk over to your neighbor's house whenever and just hang out. And that's cool with everybody.
Yeah. Chris, is what they're doing legal?
That's a great question.
I know you're not a lawyer, but
sure, we'll say it is today.
Let's say that I've heard that sometimes some of this is not always accounted for fully in the law. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. I mentioned towards the beginning, this is the second couple that I've met. The first couple actually did a house up in Weston. They wanted to be off the grid. They wanted to, for example, they wanted to do composting toilets and do a septic system. Well, we ran into a bunch of issues with the county up there, who didn't understand what we were trying to do. They're pretty closed-minded about mm-hmm. it. So we had to go back to kind of the quote-unquote traditional way of doing things.
Because the county codes and things are not written for this kind of situation.
They're not, or they're very old, and we find that the county codes don't understand something that's different. They see this and they think it's like climbing up a tree and living in a treehouse.
Well,
that's
not
the case.
Speaking of government, I'm curious about kind of the perspective of people who choose this lifestyle. I mean, do you see among your neighbors and others who are in this this world, is there an anti-government streak? Are they trying to be off the grid because they are angry with society? What's the perspective behind
it? I think
it's
mixed. I mean, one of our neighbors works for the Forest Service, so he works for the government. I think everybody's different out there. It's not as though it's a reclusive area where everybody's just stocking guns all the time.
Yeah.
There's a wide variety of reasons people go. I don't know what you'd say, Jesse.
I think there's some of those people who maybe not our closest neighbors, but some people out there, they just want to be in the middle of the desert and not have anyone bother them. And I think we hear that about our town sometimes, it's a very tiny little town, and there are people who don't want it to be any bigger. They want it just like it is. They don't want to be left alone.
Yeah. 816-235-2888, Megan in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you. I wanted to tell your guests I'm really admired with what they're doing, and I've always wished I could do it, but one of the questions I had was about solar energy. From the research I've done and talked about with others, is that it's really not that reliable, and it really doesn't give that much energy. And I wanted to know how they did it, if they just use it for certain things, because there really isn't a battery power to store up on a sunny day. So I wanted to ask those questions.
Yeah, good question, Megan. Thanks so much. Miles, variability of solar energy.
Sure. I mean, if it's cloudy, we get less. In the winter, we get less because there's less time the sun's up. But we just have one 150-watt panel, one battery, and it's definitely enough to charge computers, DVD players, phones, even for me to use my computer and recording program. But we do look forward to getting another panel, another battery.
Chris, is
yes, what Miles was talking about, and something we always say is, before you do solar, before you do any renewable energy, let's reduce your loads, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to have, like, this room we're in, we've got about 25 lights. Let's look at that first. Maybe there's a more efficient light. Maybe we can reduce the lights so that that solar panel doesn't have to work as much.
And we all for less lights in this room. Go ahead, Miles.
Yeah. Well, we do have some, there's some really great small solar lamps called D-lights that we recommend that we use at night. Also, yet we don't have, you know, a washing machine and things that would need a lot of electricity.
And we nothing don't... that is totally necessary for us to live. If we don't have it, if we don't have our computer charged, it's not a big deal.
Also, I guess briefly, I'd like to say that sometimes people think that in order to do solar panels, if you need a lot of electricity, you have to have like $10,000 investment or something.
Right.
We got our little setup and basically $1,000 and pieced it together.
Mm-hmm. We had a few questions about some of the detail, the logistics. Grace writes us in an email, can you share more about composting? Also, isn't it more sustainable to live in the city close to public transportation than out in rural areas? Which are those two questions. Let's ask about composting, Chris. How does that work for folks?
Oh, sure. You know, like at our house, what we do, we have a bin and all the food scraps, not the meat or the dairy. We just put it in the bin and then take it out. We have one of those composters that you mix. And then in the spring, before we do our garden, we're going to take that compost and put it in the garden. So we're creating a full circle.
And that's also what you're doing for a toilet, right?
Right. We just we have like a bucket and
humanure.
Do the business in the bucket and put sawdust over it. We have a sawmill just right down the street where we have an insane amount of sawdust we can pick up whenever we want. And then we dump that bucket when it's full outside in a compost pile.
And then the question about, gosh, wouldn't you be close to public transportation if you lived in the city? Isn't that a trade-off you make?
Well, I think over time, you know, once we get the food growing on the land and enough that we can use it, and once I'm get more power so I can record more often, and we will get the internet slowly with satellite, we should need to go to town that often. I'd also like to do our own laundry, so it's just a matter of time before we can do that. But that is a good point. I can understand that.
So we have just a few seconds left. How long do you think this adventure, this experiment, as you said, will go on? Is this the rest of your life?
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think it'll go on a long time. I mean, our kids might want to be somewhere else, or I might have to build them a building, but, you know, it's not a big deal anymore.
And Chris, what's one thing people can do here and now without moving to the desert to live more sustainably?
Yeah, I'd say think about where your food comes from and look at LED light bulbs.
That's Chris DeVolder, architect at 360 Architects and the sustainability guru over there. Thanks for joining us. And Miles and Jesse Bonney, longtime Kansas Cityans who have moved to New Mexico to live almost off the grid. Thank you guys so much for being with us.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear this conversation again. You can also get more information about the things we talked about today, including photos of Miles and Jesse's home online at kcur.org. Up to Date is next with a look at the big money behind politics in Missouri and Kansas. Join us here on Central Standard tomorrow as we explore concussions in the NFL and in youth sports. Who's responsible for the risky injuries involved with these sports? Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Sydney Llewellyn. Our theme music is by Miles Bonney. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.